If you're just joining us, welcome to Fast Money. We are listening to President Trump discussing where the U.S. and China stand on trade talks after a meeting with Chinese Vice Premier Liu He. Let's get to Eamon Javers, who was in that meeting room. Hey, Eamon.
Yeah, that's right, Melissa. So a couple of thoughts right off the bat. One is the president is not committing to announce a summit with Xi Jinping. There had been some reporting earlier in the day that he was likely to announce that. It turns out he doesn't announce that. He says maybe 4 more weeks of negotiations here, maybe 2 more weeks after that to get the deal papered, as he says, before ultimately there is a summit between the president and Xi Jinping if they get to a deal. You heard some very positive rhetoric there from the president about this deal. It'll be the best deal ever. It'll be a terrific deal. Things are going very well. What you didn't hear, I was in the Oval Office during the run-up to this, the part that we didn't just play back on tape. And in that run-up, the president went around the room and talked to each of his advisors, including Robert Lighthizer, the U.S. Trade Representative, and Peter Navarro, the trade advisor to the president. Both of them made comments in the Oval Office just now that were substantially more skeptical than the president's remarks were in terms of the progress on a deal. Navarro suggested that the end of a marathon is, in fact, the hardest part of the marathon. Lighthizer suggesting, in a similar vein, that they have a lot still left to agree to. So the advisors who are really in the weeds on this had a noticeably different tone, I would say. Also, I asked the president, what are the sticking points here that still remain? And he brought up two. He said one was intellectual property, the idea of the Chinese stealing American IP. And then also he said ultimately tariffs, whether they remain or not, was a sticking point as well. Those are the core things of this negotiation. And those are the two things that the president cited as remaining as sticking points. So it gives you the sense that there is still a lot to achieve here. The president, though, saying that the talks are going well. Liu He, sitting just behind him and to his right, seemed optimistic, seemed maybe buoyant at times, a very friendly smile on his face. So this is an administration that feels like things are going well, but is also careful to suggest that we're not there yet, Melissa.
Was there any talk by President Trump at this point, Eamon, about any sort of enforcement mechanism? I would think that that could be a major sticking point because, I mean, if he intends on keeping the tariffs in place, we're seeing a turn in the Chinese data. I don't know if the Chinese really have an incentive to get a deal done faster or give in on some of these major points.
Yeah, that's a good question. He did mention enforcement as a sticking point also later in the Q&A session, but he didn't say exactly what the problem there is. So I imagine that's one of a long list here of issues that are still unresolved. Not clear exactly how fast this can all happen. The president suggesting 4 weeks. That's a much different timetable than a lot of people in this town had suspected even earlier today when they thought the president might be on the verge of announcing a summit with Xi Jinping. Obviously, that's not happening. So these negotiations are ongoing, continue throughout the rest of the week, tomorrow, and we'll see where we go from there. But the president clear to suggest that things are still going very well. He's pleased with where things stand right now.
All right, Eamon, thank you. Eamon Javers joining us from the White House. So the S&P 500 continues its string of gains today, but how much is really priced in with this market? How do we react? How does the market react, Guy, to these headlines, which continue to be positive, but they lack in specifics?
Yeah, I mean, my answer a couple of weeks ago would have been the market's going to sell off. Now the market, to me, it's become so desensitized to all this. I think it's probably, maybe it sells off a few handles in the S&P, but it's sort of full speed ahead. And I think it's been full speed ahead because, again, of the rhetoric out of the Federal Reserve. And I think you asked the right question to Eamon just now. I said it last night. I don't think the Chinese, given the fact that their market's raging back and the data's been better, I don't think they're all that incentivized to do a deal. And I think some of the things we just heard now sort of backs that statement up.
I mean, if you're the Chinese, right, you want the tariffs off. He wants to keep the tariffs in place. If you're the Chinese enforcement, you want the U.S. to come and check up on you in 90 days and then 180 days after that or whenever the time frame is. I mean, that's just not, you know, characteristic of what the Chinese would want.
Yeah.
Sovereignty.
So and I think that's a detail that's obviously critical. And I'm not sure that we know that detail. I think the assumption is that they've agreed on, effectively what the terms could be. But how it will be monitored is the toughest part of this whole thing. And if monitoring means actually we keep tariffs on until we feel comfortable, however we feel that, yes, I agree with that. But I would still say that what I have heard, and based upon what my expectations would be to what China could agree to, any deal right now that at least has been talked about is bullish for China. And I think they should take the deal. It may not mean that they want to agree to these types of monitoring approaches, but therefore I think China's in a good place here.
You know, so it's really interesting today. We're talking about what does it mean for our stock market. Guy brings up the fact that the Shanghai Composite's up 30%. I don't think that the Shanghai Composite is a determining factor in whether China takes a deal prematurely or not. But I do think what's really important when you're assessing the performance of global markets is that data that we saw in Europe today. When you think about Germany, you think about factory orders, you think about exports and what they are specifically putting their finger on, it's exports to China. And when you think about this, the longer this stuff kind of drags on is the longer that we're just really getting the global economy in the sort of slump that has caused that Fed pivot that you've talked about. It's caused the European central banks to become more dovish. And I just think the longer that goes on and the longer stock markets globally continue to levitate, that creates a very dangerous situation. I just want to make one point. I love Guy Adami, but you just said, you know, a few weeks ago, I would have told you that it was going to be this. And now you said, well, the announcement, it's a couple handles in the S&P. That's kind of dangerous because that's the level of complacency we're at right now. I mean, just saying, Guy. I love you.
No, that's fair. You know, it's beaten me into being complacent. Fair point, but I'm going to take my complacency hat off now.
I feel like we're in a data tit for tat almost.
Yes. Though,
because you can point to the reading in Europe overnight, and then you can also say, you know what, China PMIs on Sunday were good.
Right.
So, like, what do you?
Yeah,
what
and
do
this
you
is just
here?
One. We're taking one piece of data right now, and it's been a good one. And I think, Guy, you mentioned they're raging back. I think part of the reason the Chinese markets are raging back is because they're sensing the possibility of some sort of a deal. I mean, so I think it's a little bit of both. I think it's what's really starting to elevate us. It's obviously, I think, coming down from below to elevate the Chinese markets as well. We continue to see everything is short term, everything's a trade, and nobody's looking out very far. But for the most part, it's pretty interesting, Mel. The one far out trade that I had today was ASHR. It's a China 300. That was another one where an ETF going all the way out to October. We haven't seen anything like that. Everything's been very short term. So they were going to the upside, expecting more from the Chinese markets to the upside. So I think if we get any kind of a deal, the Chinese markets can rally off of that. I think our markets can rally off of that. And not this particular earnings cycle, but the next earnings cycle, I think, is very, very important because that's when we're going to start to, if we get some sort of a deal sometime soon, that's when I think we're going to start to see some of these earnings start to get levitated up.
The best thing that's happened to China here is, on some level, the trade war. Because the trade, I know this sounds perverse, but the trade war actually forced their central bank. Remember, our Fed pivoted? PBOC pivoted before actually the Fed did. And that's very important because a year ago, PBOC was pulling in credit because they have a credit issue. But guess what? In the short run, they don't care about that. And there's no question that stimulus has won out. And I think that's really what it comes down to, also positioning here. Whatever the market does day to day, RSI's relative strength, momentum, positioning, complacency over in that corner. I'm just kidding. I don't think it's there. No, but my point is that I do think that whatever happens at this point, certainly market's next move could be lower just because what a run we've been on. Look, we're in overbought conditions every place, but that's just tactical. This is all about positioning. The headlines.
Are you talking in the U.S. or in China?
I'm talking about everywhere. I'm talking also, this would be, you know, I'm talking maybe 2 to 3 days if we're talking fast money lingo here. I'm saying, look, the good news is that global central banks are easing. U.S. economy is going to grow north of 2% in the second quarter. The IMF has upgraded the second half of 2019, and I think actually the European data has bottomed.
You know how the Fed pivoted and we think, if the U.S. economy rallies, if the U.S. stock market rallies as a Fed, then get more active. The same could be true for China then. If we get a trade deal and the Chinese economy starts to really pick up, do they take the pedal off the metal in terms of the stimulus? And is that a better situation? How does that change the environment for investors in something like an Asher or FXI or whatnot?
I think Tim can speak to what the Chinese would do. My sense is they probably wouldn't. I think they'd let things sort of accelerate for the foreseeable future. And then the next question is, would that force our Fed's hands? And given some of the lingo we've heard here, probably not as well. But at a certain point, there are consequences, and that's something I've said a long time. But clearly, it hasn't manifested in terms of the stock market.
I think China has more social issues to deal with their Fed, quote unquote. And therefore, I think they're going to let this thing run. I think, you know, I really do. And I do think that some of the key levels, 3,200 on that Shanghai, is very important. I think it's important for global risk.
Where are you invested right now in terms of China? How are you invested?
I'm invested in the mega caps. I'm invested in Alibaba at Tencent, a little bit of Baidu. I own EEM, and I actually own some levered and some options in the space that actually somewhere in here, to be tactical with some part of that, I think, you know, you take a couple chips off the table. But my view is it's going higher.
Coming up, Tesla in turmoil. Elon Musk leaving court as we speak as he faces off with the SEC and shares of the stock. They tanked today after big deliveries missed from the electric vehicle maker. We'll give you the latest details. Plus, Mark Zuckerberg speaking out again today about the importance of privacy on social media. Is his apology tour actually working on Wall Street? We've got the details. Plus, liftoff. There is a new way to trade the new IPO that could send shares soaring. We will explain. We are live from Times Square in New York City. Much more Fast Money right after this. Welcome back to Fast Money. A tough day for Tesla as a big delivery miss crushes the stock. CEO Elon Musk is going head-to-head with the SEC in court. In fact, he just walked out. Let's get to Phil LeBeau with all the developing details. Hey, Phil.
And Melissa, while it may have been a rough day for Elon Musk in terms of looking at Tesla's shares and how they were beaten down after the Q1 deliveries, this appearance in court went about as well as could be expected for him. Short of the judge outright dismissing the SEC complaint that he should be held in contempt of court, it was pretty clear over the course of an hour and a half that the judge was really zeroing on the question of whether or not the agreement between the SEC, Elon Musk, and Tesla when it comes to overseeing and approving his financial communications, his tweets, if it was too vague. And as a result, that's something that should be worked out between the two parties. So at the end of the hour and a half, Judge Nathan said three words: work this out. Then she ordered the attorneys for the SEC, attorneys for Elon Musk, to spend 2 weeks, get together at least for 1 hour during the 2 weeks, and see if they could modify the SEC agreement with Elon Musk when it comes to his financial communications. And again, he has to respond, or their attorneys have to respond within 2 weeks about whether or not they could work out a modification of that agreement. Here's Elon Musk talking with us as he left court today.
Very impressed with Judge Nathan. Judge Nathan's just an outstanding representative of the judiciary. Their arguments were excellent.
Do you think you can work this out with the SEC over the next 2 weeks?
And I'm sure they probably will work something out. Melissa, one last thing. I was in court and I was sitting in the jury box, so it allows you to have a chance to see everybody, the plaintiffs, the lawyers, see their faces as opposed to sitting in the back with the rest of the people who were in the courtroom. And Elon Musk was engaged throughout this entire hearing, but as it was clear the judge was not going to find him in contempt of court, at least not today, you could see his demeanor starting to improve as the hearing went on. So again, we'll find out within the next 2 weeks whether or not they can work out some modification to the policy of how Tesla will monitor and approve his financial communications.
Does Musk have to be in that meeting, in that mandatory at least 1 hour meeting? I'm just wondering because, you know, in walking into the courthouse, Phil, I think that you got the best soundbite of Elon Musk. It's not even a soundbite because he didn't say anything really all day. And that's when somebody asked him if he respected the justice system. He said yes. You said how about the SEC?
Yeah.
And he just grimaced. Classic Elon Musk grimace.
I don't know if he has to be in those meetings. I think it's mainly between legal counsel for the SEC and the lawyers for Elon Musk. So I would be surprised if he'll be required to be in those meetings. But remember, Melissa, we went into today and everybody was saying, wow, are they going to strip him of the CEO job? Are they going to impose some massive fine on him, find him in contempt of court? And it was very clear early on that the judge really does not want to go down the contempt of court route. She believes that they can work this out.
All right. Phil, thank you. Phil LeBeau in Lower Manhattan in front of the courthouse. All right. Let's trade test. By the way, just monitoring his Twitter feed, nothing for 20 hours. So maybe he will sort of stay off it until something's worked out. Where do we go with Tesla? We saw more than 8% decline on the delivery numbers. The concern was the massive shortfall in the S&X deliveries,
yep,
which could mean a whole lot of things. Maybe underlying demand is not there. Maybe the federal tax credit, maybe that's really impacting demand there. Maybe there's cannibalization because of the Model 3.
And the competition that's out there that everybody keeps talking about, the competition starting to catch up. But, you know, it depends on who you want to listen to right now. I mean, are you talking about Tesla, the car company? Or are you talking about Tesla, the technology company? I mean, that's really what it comes down to, because we had Catherine Wood sitting here not too many weeks ago talking about this stock being a $4,000 stock and laying out all the reasons because of data that's been saved and all the rest of the technology side of what Tesla is. So it really does depend, Mel. I mean, this was a terrible number that they reported. Absolutely terrible. No doubt about it. Down 31%. That's awful. Worst in history. That's awful. So that is something that I think that they're going to have to grapple with. And I think we're going to still see this push and pull on where Tesla goes. Do the Ron Barons of the world, are they right? Or is, you know, many of these analysts who continue to say $200 is the price target that it should be at?
It may be a matter of time frame, too, right, in terms of who is right on that front.
Yeah, look, I don't know what Ron Barron is seeing, so I'm going to be very clear on that. They said they have sufficient cash to continue. I mean, what does that mean? For a company that was cash strapped, they now actually have contraction in growth. They've got $11 billion in debt, $3.6 billion in non-recourse debt. They've got, you know, essentially a company that really has, they've got almost a $5 billion obligation to Panasonic. They've got suppliers that haven't been paid. I mean, I don't understand how there's anything about this. I mean, forget tech company. I mean, why haven't they raised money, to me, is the bigger issue. And I think it's just a matter of time.
So, interestingly enough, today I heard an interview you had with Tony Saganagi early today. Yeah. I mean, for some reason now, it seems like there's a lot of analysts or a lot of investors are contemplating what this company looks like with a different CEO. I mean, I heard it on numerous occasions. I heard one investor say, well, why wouldn't they get a Mark Fields? You know, he's sitting on the sideline. This, that. And, you know, I have to think sooner or later, I know this hearing went pretty well tonight, but that's got to be a distinct possibility. The other thing, when you think about it, I heard Max Levchin on the network earlier today talking about Elon, saying what a genius he is and this and that, whatever. Don't you think at some point he just wants to go do space and let these mere humans do electric vehicles here on Earth? I was just saying. So I actually think there's a distinct possibility in the not so distant future. He's chairman, not CEO. He focused on SpaceX. Let somebody else fix this problem.
SEC makes a great scapegoat, too.
Yeah.
You know, I really do. I mean, that's what I think this
really,
whole thing's
about.
Really,
but I mean, if he's found not in contempt, or they hammer this out in some way, he is not forced to relinquish the CEO role. But then he turns around and says, you know what? I am going to step aside and be chairman or chief creative, whatever you want to call me, and let somebody on the operations side take over as CEO. What would the stock do?
I think actually it might be bullish.
I think it would be,
right?
I mean,
maybe
I think
6 months
would go
ago, we have a different conversation. Like, now it's bullish. And quickly, I think the reason why they didn't think that, you know, last year we heard they'd be cash flow positive by the end of last year. Obviously, that didn't come to fruition. That might be one of the reasons. And, you know, Dan gives it to me on a almost a nightly basis.
Yeah.
And the other night, I thought Tesla had a very good chance to break out to the upside through this trend line. And for a day, it looked like it was right, but it stopped dead there. So what does it mean now? Well, look at the lows in October and look at the lows back in last April, which comes in around 248 to 250. It seems like that's where it wants to trade.
Let's see what a technician would say about
those real levels. Technician. Oh.
Yes, a real one, not just
how exciting.
Yeah.
Armchair.
Things in the corner over there. our next guest says Tesla shareholders may be in for even more pain. Let's go off the charts with Todd Gordon. He's over at the Plasma. Hey, Todd.
Hey, Melissa. What Guy said. No, just kidding. First, before we get down to that level that Guy correctly identified, let's look at the long-term chart of Tesla. And I would refer back to classic Dow theory, or a little bit more advanced, which is Elliott theory, which says that markets complete phases unfold in three particular trend efforts. So the early one was right there. That's number one. Big breakout here. The second. And then this is the third and, I believe, final push before we get a significant correction. Looking at the relative strength index, RSI, all it does is measure rate of change or momentum. You can get price moving up, but at a decreasing rate of change, eventually hits the apex and it sells off. What you'll see is very strong relative strength index, high momentum in that breakout. Ever since we've been pressing up against the $400 region, RSI is nowhere to be seen. Lots of loss of momentum, so not confirming this higher price. So that's long term. Get down to the daily chart here. As Guy said, big time support right around the $250 mark. Now, we're very much range bound. And for all the bad news in the stock, in the news cycle, you think we should be through support. We're not yet there. I hold Tesla. I have a half position in my portfolio. I'm not happy about it. If we're to break this 250 mark, as Guy mentioned, I will bail. And I think a lot of other people will come in and start selling. Interestingly, in the options market on the put side, the 250 strike that expires in April, the monthlies, that's the biggest open interest. So I wonder if that's going to be a target. So again, below there, and this chart is in contempt of, let's say, the uptrend.
Todd, so would you say that right now it looks like this is the kind of stock that you can trade within the range?
I think the risk to reward, I have no idea what's going to happen in the future. I think as traders, we have to admit that. But the R2R, the reward to risk, is so small because, again, I think the prevailing sentiment is so bearish, yet support hasn't been broken. That kind of tells you something. So what's what would it cost you, $5 or $8 to potentially get a retest of the old high? I mean, what is that? You know, that's a 20, 30, 40 to 1 reward to risk ratio. Maybe it's only a 10% chance of occurrence, but that's a good trade.
All right, Todd, thank you. Todd Gordon, TradingAnalysis.com. Pete, what's the volatility look like in Tesla?
You know what? It's gotten a little, it's elevated a little bit. Yeah. I mean, we've seen a couple of different individual stocks, even though we've watched volatility itself in the broader market coming down. But there are some stocks, this one, Boeing, some of these names, where you still see implied volatility is a little bit higher. I think that's the only way, the best way to play Tesla. And I've said that forever, but it's just a volatile stock. It can take your knees out at any moment in time. But if you've got a risk reward of an options, particularly an options call spread, if you're looking for the upside, if it can hold support that Todd's talking about where it is right now and maybe has some upside, give away a little bit of upside. Put on a call spread. That's exactly what I have right now.
Yeah. What is your position in Tesla? Because people who watch will think you're short.
I'm short the stock.
Okay.
I'm short the stock. I've been mostly playing it through options, and I think it's been the way
short
to do
via
it.
Short options as opposed to...
Like buying
I'm short
what?
Physical stock
okay.
right now. Right. It's not as... massive position. I the way to play this is in options. And as I say, I think the first quarter, the 10Q that comes out in mid-May is I would want to be playing my options with that as an expiration. Having said all that, you know, we talk about this stock and range and risk reward. I think the price has gotten almost meaningless. But I also will just point out the 5-year chart on this stock, you've lost money. Okay, why be in this trade? You've lost money. And if you think about a risk-reward basis, that's what I hear everybody talking about. There's a lot of volatility for a stock that's done nothing. Are you really going to get these turns? Are you going to get these statements that come out, some that are real, some that are not right? I don't think so.
All right. Guy, last word.
It would be interesting to hear what to your point, what Ron Barron says. I'm not going to, you know, he's probably not watching. He's not going to sort of take you on. But interesting what he has to say based on what we've seen over the last 24 hours. That's really the voice that I'd like to hear again.
So ahead, Snap shares more than doubling this year as the company tries to turn itself around. And CEO Evan Spiegel just unveiled something that could be a game changer for investors. We've got the details. Plus, Constellation Brands soaring today as its cannabis investment seems to pay off. We'll hear from the CEO in just a few minutes. More Fast Money right after this. Welcome back to Fast Money. Shares of Snap rallying today on announcements made at the company's first ever partner summit. This is a stock has more than doubled this year. Julia Borson's at the Snap Summit in West Hollywood with all the details. Hi, Julia.
Hey, Melissa, that's right here. Evan Spiegel, Snap CEO, talking about how he wants to expand Snap and make it a bigger part of its users' lives with new tools and new partnerships to help keep its users hooked, but also help grow ad dollars. Perhaps the biggest move to grow time spent on Snapchat, a new game service, which will be free with 6-second ads, opening up a whole new revenue stream. Second, Snap is making a big move to integrate with other apps so users can share Snap stories to apps like Tinder, and you'll be able to share the shows you're watching from Netflix back to Snap. And Snap announced that there's an ad network in the works to bring its ads into other apps.
The Snapchat camera changes how we see, how we speak, how we shop, how we tell stories, and so much more.
Snap also stepping up its augmented reality lenses to stay ahead of Facebook and Instagram, which have copied them. Now, Snap's offering the ability to track hands, bodies, even pets, and even has lenses for landmarks like the Eiffel Tower. Spiegel stressing how different Snap is from Facebook with its focus on protecting user data and privacy. Now, this comes as Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg defended Facebook's progress after so many scandals, saying in an interview on ABC that he is confident that they will be able to prevent manipulation of the 2020 election. He also reiterated that they want to be regulated, particularly when it comes to political ads.
I think setting the rules around political advertising is not a company's job. Right? I mean, there's been plenty of rules in the past. It's just that at this point, they're not updated to the modern threats that we face. We need new rules.
Now, just today, Guggenheim upgraded Facebook shares from neutral to buy. The reason? confidence that investors are going to care a lot less about these privacy issues, just becoming more comfortable with them. Melissa, back over to you.
All right, Julia, thank you. Julia Boorstin joining us from West Hollywood. All right, so Snap's making a bunch of changes to keep people on the app, which is always very important in terms of engaging people, right? So at this point, would you rather?
Oh, I like this game.
Facebook?
It's easy for you.
Or Snap?
Sorry. I think it's probably a pretty easy one. Snap at this point. Just listen, I think Facebook, despite the horrible sentiment, the stock acts amazing. It really does. And I actually can see it breaking out above 180. I think you get your most bang for your buck in Snap right now because, yeah, the stock's up 100%. But I think this advertising contingency on their platform is so unique. And I think that ad dollars are going to keep going that way despite the losses that they have.
To me, it would be Facebook. That may sound like a shock to people here, but I'm not that impressed with anything that's going on at Snap in terms of the growth and the overall size of the business relative to where they were, the opportunity set they had, and the multiple that it trades at. I would take issue with an analyst saying that privacy issues are becoming less important. I think they're becoming a lot more important. I think people are a lot more attuned to this.
I think less important that investors have grown more comfortable to the uncertainty surrounding the privacy issues, I think, is the point that the analyst is making.
Yeah, but at some point, the product itself has to be something that people are comfortable using. And I think we talked about the Instagram dynamic yesterday. Actually, that's very bullish. And it's probably a different way they can be targeting ads and maybe offering people a little different type of a privacy experience.
Yeah, I know you like those lenses, Guy.
Fantastic. I have them actually
reality.
Back in the green room because that's typically on Fridays after our show when I watch OA, I wear those lenses. It makes it a crazy show. I mean, it's just fantastic. That being said, if you're asking me to play the game, play the game.
Ask yourself,
Snap, and I'll tell you why. Whoa. A little crazy, right? But Snap, if you look last quarter, fourth quarter, stock was up 24% after they reported a remarkable quarter for them. I don't think people are going to try. I don't think people will be fooled the second time, which means I think they will continue to buy the stock into their earnings release on the 23rd. They made improvements to the Android side of this business for people to use it on that device, which I think will help as well. So I think it continues to rally in their earnings release.
Now, it would be too easy for me to ask Pete Najarian, Snap or Facebook.
Really?
So I'll throw one more
in there.
Would you rather Facebook,
Ooh.
Snap, or Twitter?
I'm going to go with Facebook. And the reason is they've got all these different verticals. I own Facebook. I had the calls. I had them until today. I actually got out today out of some calls that we'd seen from unusual activity. But I will tell you this. Instagram is, I mean, when you talk about the verticals, that is the growth mechanism right now. Everybody, and Facebook, as much as everybody said they're leaving it, they're concerned about the privacy issues and everything else, they're not leaving. They're still there. And the user and the engagement's still there. That's why the stock is trading the way it is.
All right. Still ahead. Lyft trading just below its IPO price. But there is a new way to trade that stock that could send shares soaring. In the next week, we've got the details. Plus, check out our Cramer cam. And there is Jim sitting down with the Constellation CEO in an exclusive interview. We'll give you a sneak peek of that when Fast Money returns. Welcome back to Fast Money. Constellation Brands soaring today, up 6%, posting its best trading day in 2 years. After its earnings report this morning, the company announcing plans to shift its focus to beer and pot to appeal to a younger audience. CEO Bill Newlands just spoke with CNBC's Jim Cramer moments ago to discuss the cannabis craze.
Canada is on a run rate of $5 to $6 billion in sales, and Canopy is the leading player in that market. So if you just think about Canada alone, you're going to have a great opportunity. Then you add in new form factors later this year and things like beverage and other edibles. We think the sky's the limit. This is going to be a big business.
All right. So in the past, Constellation didn't do so well when they've taken down guidance and it wasn't sure whether that investment would pay off. Now it looks like it might.
Well, yeah, I don't think that Canada is really what they're thinking about here entirely. It was obviously the first move to make. It was obviously the federal move to make. It was the right move to make. I think Canopy is a great company, and I think it's well led. And I think the relationship between these two companies, both which are kind of pioneers in their respective spaces, that seem to be coming together. Beer sales are dying. They're certainly
slowing.
They're slowing. And if you look at actually where expectations are in the company, I think you've priced in a lot of negativity. In fact, they came in ahead of expectations. I think it 184 a share. I think this is on a relative basis a good number, but they are thinking about the world. This is a company that effectively has consolidated the spirits business, the beer business around the world. That's how they see cannabis. It's a global industry. It's all happening everywhere right now, and they are right now the biggest player.
And I think they're progressively getting that aggressiveness in terms of the global play. And because of what they've done, they've got the edibles, they've got all these different areas where they've got these different verticals that can grow. So I think they're doing the right thing. Obviously, they were impacted early, but now you're starting to see, I think, a little bit more of a lift with the potential for the future. So because of that, this is a very inexpensive stock, too. I mean, let's be honest. When you look at it, Constellation is very, very cheap still.
Good quarter. I think it surprised a lot of people. 20 times forward earnings. I don't think that's that outrageous. And can it make a push towards back towards 200 where it broke down from? Absolutely. But much past there. I mean, this was a good quarter. I don't think it was a great quarter.
No.
But I think it would surprise a lot of people.
All right. Be sure to catch the full exclusive interview with Jim Cramer and the Constellation CEO. That's tonight on Mad Money at the top of the hour. Coming up next, Lyft options begin trading today. We will tell you what the market is implying as a stock as it makes a round trip right back to its IPO price. We're live at the Nasdaq in Times Square. Much more Fast Money still ahead. Welcome back to Fast Money. Lyft making a round trip ride right back to its IPO price, closing at exactly $72 a share. And it's a big day as options on the stock began trading for the first time today. Dan Nathan's at the Plaza to tell you everything you need to know in a very special options action. Dan.
Very special, Mel. I would say this. If you think back over the last 5 years or so when we've had some big tech IPOs, this is probably the shortest distance between the IPO and when options were listed. So I know a lot of investors were really looking at this because the stock has been a bit volatile since that Friday pricing. But I think it's really important to think about how to trade options around a new issue like this, especially one where it's pretty controversial, I think. You know, there's a few things that I think you want to be cognizant of if you're thinking about buying calls or puts or selling them for that matter, too, that out of the gate, there's going to be very light volume. They were just listed today, right? So market makers are just kind of getting their feet wet here a little bit, making markets. And because of that, because of the illiquidity and the light volume, you're going to have wide bid ask, okay? So if you're going in there to buy an option, that means you're going to be paying the offer. You're going to sell an option. That means you're going to be hitting a bid most likely. And that crossing that bid ask can make trading obviously pretty expensive, especially in illiquid markets. And the last point I'll just make right now, as market makers are kind of getting their feel for this thing, that because of some of those other dynamics I just mentioned, options are going to be expensive in vol terms right now before there's some trading history and there's some other technical components about the borrow that are also making them kind of expensive here. So that's that today, first day. Call volume is actually 2 times that of puts, which I thought was pretty interesting. Oftentimes you'll see puts more active, but because of that borrow, the puts in an interestingly dynamic right now are more expensive than calls. That should alleviate over some period of time. I just want to go here and let's use options to kind of price how much option traders are expecting Lyft to move over the next week. Let's look at April 12th right now. If you bought the at-the-money straddle when the stock is 72, that would be the April 12th next Friday, 72 call and the 72 put. You put that premium together, it costs you 420. That is the implied movement between now and April 12th close. That's about 6%. You would need to move up to 76.20 to make money if you thought the stock could go up buying that straddle, or down to 67.80 to make money on the close of next Friday. One last point here. Let's look at the price action in this stock. Obviously, it was priced at 72, the IPO. It opened up at 87. It's gone down the last couple of days. Look at the volume. The volume's been declining. But look at this here. About 2 days ago, stock opened low, closed higher. Yesterday, closed flat. Today, open on the lows, closing the highs, back at the price here. The volume's been declining the whole way. Maybe it's trying to find a little support right here. There's a couple catalysts I think are really important to think about. 25 days after the IPO, underwriters can initiate on research coverage. That's something to keep an eye on as we get later in the month. And then I would expect this company to report their first quarter out of the gate in mid-May. So those are potentially positive catalysts going forward.
Dan made a good point in terms of the trading history of the stock. Would you use, Pete, those implied moves as guidance, or because the trading history is so short,
do
you think that it's not a good indicator?
I think it's an incredibly short history, but I think also Dan brings up the most important point, which is the bid-ask spreads right now between those options are incredibly wide. I mean, you can drive a truck through these things. It makes it much more dangerous to be right. Even when you're right, you might be wrong. So I think that's important. I thought the volume today impressed me. Dan said it was a little bit light. We talked about 30,000 options trading in there today, so I think for that reason, I think you got to keep an eye on this name.
All right, we'll leave Dan over at the Plasma. For more options action, check out the full show tomorrow, 5:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Up next, final trades. Final trade time, Pete.
I think China's going higher. JD's the way to play it. Giddy up.
Tim.
Yeah, I am long Constellation Brands. Nice to see these guys back above water. I'm staying in that trade.
Dan?
Snap. I suspect when analysts kind of come back and kind of evaluate what was going on here, they're going to like it. I think it has more upside momentum.
Guy.
Although he had a rough home opener today, I believe the stock named after him, Thor Industries, is on the verge of breaking out. So I would say THO, Melissa.
Sounds like a Yankee fan who's a little disgruntled with his own start.
That does it for us. See you back here tomorrow at 5 for more Fast Money. Meantime, don't go anywhere. Mad Money with Jim Cramer starts right now. We'll be right back.